Good afternoon and welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I come to you every week to discuss self-care and integrated health. In an attempt to improve health and strength, people will end up at some point in their lives in a gym. The science of exercise is actually relatively new. People didn't really feel the need to exercise when they were working hard, finding or raising food. The art of strength training and body sculpting is even more modern. It's not surprising that few people actually understand that training muscles to be larger and stronger might actually be insurance against illness and injury. Weightlifting routines were passed on by athletes. They were developed by athletes who began to discover using weights as a way to train their bodies, and they passed on their routines to each other. And now we have the science of exercise physiology and a body of research to confirm what athletes had discovered on their own training, that strength training, weight training with weights, improves not only visibly your physique, but it also improves balance so that you maintain what we call proprioception or balance throughout your life. And cardiovascular health is improved by weightlifting, oddly. And skeletal integrity. The bones stay dense throughout life. Studies on the frail elderly reveal that muscles and bones respond and improve at any age or health status. Today I want to talk to you about strength training and specifically weight resistance training or weight lifting. The first thing I might do is distinguish between strength training, different types of strength training. We think of weight resistance training. We think of weight lifting as strength training. But any training which utilizes a concept called interval training is considered strength training. What this means is that as you are exercising or moving, there are intervals or periods where it becomes very difficult. Some of you may know this because you will get on some kind of aerobic machine at the gym, like a cycle of some sort or a Stairmaster, and the Stairmaster or cycle will change the amount of resistance. It'll pretend that you're going up a hill suddenly, so that during the time that you're cycling, suddenly you start to get out of breath. You're starting to have to push really hard, and you start to get out of breath. When you get out of breath, that is considered anaerobic metabolism. That's a metabolism that occurs with the use of stored fuel in your body, and it doesn't use air. Aerobic exercise is the one where you're running so that you can still talk, or you're swimming or biking, and you're not completely out of breath. So strength training happens when you're out of breath. It happens, I mean, you don't have to actually be out of breath, but it happens when you do a burst of something that is maximal effort. It's a maximal effort. It's about the most you can do. It's pushing, or it's certainly pushing you past the point of being able to breathe comfortably. It's pushing your respiration a little. That's interval training, and that builds strength. When you do interval training and you're doing something that's cardiovascular, you're building strength in that activity. If you're a runner and you usually run at a kind of steady state for some period of time, and you begin to incorporate some sprints in your run, so that you're sort of running at a certain pace, and then all of a sudden you run really hard for a while, you do a sprint. That's interval training, because during that sprint, you are building strength and stamina. You're not using air to do that. You're burning stored fuel, and I'll explain as we go along what exactly that means. But this is also what happens when you lift weights. To some extent, it's what happens when you do team sports, too, because in a team sport, you will have a period where you'll suddenly have to jump into action quite literally and do a maximal effort. The difference is that, unlike what people usually assume, doing team sports is not a form of training. You train to do team sports because team sports are challenging to the joints and the limbs and overall conditioning. So people usually need to condition or train the body in order to do them without risking injury. So playing basketball is actually not a good form of exercise. It's something you would train to do, and then you might do it as well as your other conditioning exercise. So interval training uses a different metabolism than aerobic exercise. To some extent, too, I would say, if you're taking a aerobic class, they call it aerobic class, but during part of the class, the teacher turns up the volume or turns up the speed of what you're doing to the point where you're almost completely out of breath and then slows it down, that could be considered interval training. And during that period where you're really pushing your effort and you're getting your respiration is getting fast and you're it's harder for you, you can't talk anymore, you're really just breathing hard, that's strength training. But the most common form of strength training is weight resistance training, using weights or machines. Some people do a form of weight resistance training in the water, using water as a form of resistance, although my observation is that unless you're very deconditioned or something, it's usually not a sufficient resistant load to build a lot of muscle, and I'll explain how that works. But let me, for a moment, go back to this idea of metabolism and aerobic and anaerobic, because although I think for many years we were getting an education in this, but in the 80s it was very popular to talk about exercise and people talked a lot about this. Let me make sure that you do understand the difference. Aerobic, as I said, aerobic exercise burns oxygen, uses oxygen, but what happens when you do aerobic exercise is that as you begin, for the first few minutes, and it could be anywhere from a very short period of time, for just 3 or 5 minutes, to maybe 12 to 20 minutes, depending on your fitness level, depending on how fit you are, the amount of time that it takes for your body to switch over to an aerobic metabolism, which is one that actually burns fat as a fuel. This is a preferred fuel for the body. The body really likes to burn fat. In fact, oddly enough, your brain, which runs on sugar, still burns fat down to make ketones for the brain. So there's fat burning is a very common metabolism for the body, but you won't get to fat burning until you've used carbohydrate or sugar as stored glycogen in your liver as kindling for the fire that will eventually run on fat, which means you'll burn your body fat. It keeps you lean. Now, what do I mean by kindling, and what do I mean by glycogen? Again, the more muscle you have on the body, the more conditioned you are, the more of this stored sugar you will have in your body. Now, it isn't necessary, contrary to some myths and sort of popular fads that were going on during the aerobic craze of the 80s, that you need to load up on sugar and carbohydrate in order to perform cardiovascular or aerobic exercise with air. You don't have to carbo load. In fact, some recent studies have shown that it's probably not a good idea to do that. Of course, whenever I start to talk about this, we're talking about probably a moderate form of these exercises. Really, a peak performance athlete who is running a triathlon will, in fact, have to, in order to get through, will have to probably consume something that has a lot of carbohydrate in it in order to get through. Now, there is some controversy on this because I have observed myself that when triathletes increase their protein intake, they actually do better than when they increase their carbohydrate intake. But the bottom, because your body will break protein down into sugar as well. So the concept that I'm trying to get here, not to confuse you, is that when we talk about the body storing sugar in the liver called glycogen, it isn't necessary that the person has eaten a bunch of sugar in order to store this in the liver. The body will convert whatever you eat into the proper fuel, both for stored glycogen, for repair of the muscles, and for your brain, various things like that. Even if you're eating a diet that's rich in protein and low in carbohydrates, it will still make this leap. This isn't to say that people should never eat carbohydrates. Certainly, people should. And, you know, vegetables are carbohydrates, and so are starches like breads and pasta. But it isn't necessary to eat a high-sugar diet in order to perform aerobic exercise. The body will, like I said, the fitter you are, the more conditioned you are, and the more muscle tissue you have on your body, the more your body is trained to turn the fuel that you eat into stored energy. In fact, after a training session, there's a little window of time for about an hour to an hour and a half, during which your body will utilize a higher percentage of the food that you eat as stored energy and for repair. So it uses the food in a more effective way within an hour or so after, you know, in that time period right after an exercise session. So exercise improves your body's ability to store the food that you eat as to be used later for exercise instead of laying it down as storage as fat. You're less likely to do that. Now, that said, most individuals, even well-trained, only have roughly an hour and a half's worth of glycogen stored in the liver. So, for instance, if you're doing something that isn't aerobic, if you're doing aerobic exercise, you're going along, you start to burn sugar first. You start burning your stored glycogen from the liver, and that gets a fire going. As you continue to go at a steady state without getting out of breath, the body metabolism switches over to a fat-burning metabolism, and it starts burning the fat you've eaten and then the fat on your body. So this is what enables somebody to take an extremely long walk for hours and hours and hours, or to do a run that goes on for a long period of time, because they're using oxygen and fat, so you can get on for a long time. So even though you're using sugar as a fuel to start this metabolism, the aerobic exercise eventually hums along on its own. Anaerobic exercise, which is strength training, which is what we're talking about today, isn't using fat as a fuel until after you're done exercising. What happens during the exercise is that your body is constantly drawing on the glycogen in your liver to get you through these intervals of hard work. Might be worth mentioning, too, that if you are in a constant state of stress, your body will start to put you into this kind of a situation, too, where it starts to put demands on the sugar system. This is one of the reasons why people who have sugar metabolism problems don't do well under stressful situations. They start getting hypoglycemic. It's complicated. I have it written down how this all works, but I'm afraid it's going to just overwhelm people because it's pretty complicated. But let's say that, to put it simply, the sugar burning is something that's used when the body is demanding that it needs fuel right away and in these hard sort of maximal efforts. Now, intuitively, you might think to yourself, why is that so good? I only have an hour and a half worth of stored fuel sitting around here. Why would I want to burn it all up doing exercise? Why would that be good? Wouldn't a fat-burning metabolism be healthier to do that? Well, the issue is this. Strength training builds muscle. Strength training is what builds muscle. And incidentally, the more muscle that you have on your body, the larger and stronger your bones are. There is a direct correlation between muscle mass and bone mass. So that we know is a good idea, but even beyond that, muscle itself is active tissue. That means that muscle makes demands on the fuel in your body all the time. A person who is muscular or even, you know, just has a good ratio to fat and lean and muscle, meaning they may not look thin, but somebody who doesn't have a lot of extra stored fat on their body and has fairly good muscle structure, when they're watching TV, they're burning fat. They're burning fat when they're resting. So having a better body composition, having a body composition that favors having good muscle on you, is going to maintain your body composition. So if you're someone who would like to be leaner, you know, because as you know, leaner people live longer. They tend not to get as many diseases. There's less heart disease, less cardiovascular disease, blood pressure problems, diabetes. Any number of cascading illnesses come out of situations where people are carrying more adipose tissue, more fat on their bodies, and have a less good ratio of lean to muscle. And in terms of aging and anti-aging, your best anti-aging is to maintain active tissue on your body. As you age, your body becomes more catabolic. It tends not to be anabolic. Anabolic is building. Catabolic is breaking down. And as you age, your body's capacity to recover from the stress and the workload of the day, the efforts of your brain or your physical exercise, it recovers, but more slowly. It repairs more slowly. So having enough muscle and having enough bone on your body will make all of these functions more effective. And it's a good idea to start doing this as early in life as you can, although the studies on individuals who trained very hard and were very athletic as young people, but then sort of got tired of it and stopped doing it in middle age, and then they're compared to the individuals who didn't work out when they were young and started exercising in middle age because they went, yikes. Actually, the people who started in middle age are the ones that maintain strength and conditioning and good structure and health and stuff into old age. That isn't to say that if you start young and you continued, that you wouldn't be the same. But there was no difference between people who started young and continued as they got older and the people who started in middle age and went on. They were all in good shape toward the end. Only the people who stopped weren't. So what have I said here? I said that there are two different metabolisms, that we have a fat-burning metabolism, which occurs when you're doing a walk where you can still, you're not out of breath, or you're making some kind of steady-state effort on a bicycle or swimming or something, you're not completely out of breath, and interval training or strength training where you are out of breath, anaerobic metabolism, which relies on the stored glycogen in your liver to deliver. And the reason for doing this is not only does it build capacity. If you're a runner and you want to have better lung capacity, you're going to sprint periodically. You're going to do interval training to push your cardiovascular, push your vascular and lung capacity so that you can run harder and faster in general, so that you're fitter and that you recover faster. So strength and stamina are built by interval strength training. And the reason for doing the weightlifting is that you, when you put on extra muscle, when you add muscle to your body, and you don't have to look like someone in a magazine, because I guarantee actually that unless you're taking performance-enhancing drugs, you won't look like the people in the magazine anyway. Most normal people who lift weights, no matter for how long or how hard, generally never look sort of out of proportion like that. It just doesn't happen by accident. They mostly just look sort of fit. But the more muscle you have, you are gaining benefits in muscle mass, bone mass, and you're gaining this active tissue, which is also much more sensitive to insulin. So it protects you from getting diabetes, or if you're a diabetic, it helps you to get out of that situation. There's also, and you're burning fat at rest, and when you complete a weight training session or an interval training session where you've been burning stored glycogen, what happens is that your body shifts into a fat-burning mode and stays in a fat-burning mode for many hours afterwards, like 4 to 5 hours, even longer than after a cardiovascular aerobic session where you've been using fat as a fuel. When you finish with the weight training exercise, for the rest of the day, you're burning fat as a fuel, even when you're not exercising. So there's a benefit in that as well. So you're changing your body's sugar metabolism with adding extra muscle, and you're adding beneficial hormones, and you're also balancing all of your hormones, your sex hormones and the hormones that transport energy through your body, and your stress hormones, cortisol and adrenaline. All of these stress hormones are somewhat balanced by regular exercise training, unless, of course, the exercise training is out of balance with the amount of recovery and rest you need. So there is a direct correlation. The more exercise you do, the more rest you're going to need to recover, because the benefits of exercise occur when you're actually sleeping and resting. That's when your body adapts to what you've asked it to do. Now, one of the things that I've said to you is that interval training is strength training, and cardiovascular training or aerobic training that pushes you into an anaerobic mode where you get out of breath, doing sprints and stuff, is also interval training. And research shows, when you go back and you look at the existing research on strength training and exercise, research shows that aerobic exercise alone isn't as effective at improving strength and endurance as interval training. Just very quickly to ID the show, I'm Lena Berman, health integrationist, and I'm doing a show alone on strength training, weight lifting exercise, the science of it. So what I've just said is that cardiovascular exercise alone, the aerobic style of that, isn't enough to really, it doesn't as effectively make people fit. They did comparisons. If you do only weight resistance training, so let's say you say, okay, well, if doing aerobic exercise alone doesn't get you as fit as doing weightlifting, with, you know, say, what about just doing weightlifting exercise, that doing that alone? Because in fact, the research does show that surprisingly, even though you're not running up a hill, you are improving your cardiovascular health when you do strength training using weights or that sort of, you know, when you're out of breath, because you're building stamina and strength into the muscles. So when you compare individuals who do just aerobic exercise, running and swimming and stuff at a steady state, with individuals who do strength training, and you measure their output and capacity and speed and strength on a treadmill or something, they are surpassing them in a way, because they have more muscle and more strength. The problem here is that it's not an either-or, because weightlifting exercise isn't really a substitute. It doesn't as effectively improve your heart muscle and your lungs, not as much. I mean, it does make you as strong or stronger, but there is a way in which it's still useful to do some form of cardiovascular. And here I'm going to make a separation between cardiovascular and aerobic, because what I mean here is the real issue is interval training is what really trains people well. So it means that just doing steady state, like just walking or just running or just swimming, by itself is not going to get you as fit as doing those things with some interval training, whether you want to do weightlifting on your off days and keep your cardiovascular, your exercise that's running or walking, light, and then put your maximal effort into your weights. Or if you are doing something cardiovascular, that you spend some of that time doing sprint work or pushing yourself so that you're out of breath. That's interval training. That's strength training. So it means that a combination of the two is probably optimal. But you know, one of the things that people sort of forget to do when they're thinking about what to do in terms of training is, what is it that you want your body to do? Most of us are not peak performance athletes, even though those of us who are fairly serious about exercise and consistent may not be training for races. What you want your body to do, what you're asking it to do, is how you train it. It's form follows function. If you want to be able to take very long, arduous hikes up mountains, and you want to train for that, then your interval training, your cardiovascular, taking long walks where there's periods where you either sprint or you walk up very, you know, up hills very fast, and you get out of breath. Building strength and weightlifting also will help you to perform those things. If what you're trying to do is just maintain a degree of fitness that will make you maintain healthy, you know, be healthy and strong throughout your life as you age, and you don't want to spend enormous amounts of time doing it, the best bet is probably going to be to combine some weight training with weights with walking or something that just is more gentle and not exhaustive, that trains your cardiovascular system as well. You may find that when you do the cardiovascular exercise and you're doing some aerobic, that you may want, for part of the time that you're doing it, to get a little out of breath and then slow it down and relax a little bit. But the combination, if it's not exhaustive and you're getting enough rest, is probably ideal. Weightlifting is extremely concentrated exercise. One of the reasons that it's so great is that you can perform weight resistance training exercises in a very short period of time and get an enormous amount of results. When I became interested in weightlifting, it was partly because I used to notice how much I envied gymnasts and dancers and how their bodies looked, particularly gymnasts, you know, how they looked. And what I began to understand as I studied weight resistance training and as I began to do it is that you can get your body to look that way without training for hours a day the way gymnasts do and putting their joints and limbs at risk, because weight training exercise is so concentrated. You perform an exercise that overloads, it's called the overload principle, you overload the muscle in a controlled range of motion, with as heavy a weight as you can lift for a certain number of repetitions, number of times, and it gets very tired, and it gets so tired it can't do that anymore, and then you leave it alone, let it rest, and the muscle will grow. This is, incidentally, the only thing that you can do to a muscle is to get it grow. The concept that if you lift a very light weight a lot of times, really high repetitions, that you will have leaner, more sinewy muscles, is not true. There is absolutely no science to show that this is so. If you don't want to have enormous muscles, you don't lift weights as much. You don't push as hard. But you still, in order to maintain muscle mass, I'm here to tell you, you still have to make an effort that makes the muscle go to failure or to fatigue and makes it grow. That's all you can do to the muscle. And in fact, then you will look toned. And those people that look toned to you are doing that. Or else they're doing other forms of, you know, they're doing something that's a whole body exercise that keeps them toned. I'm going to need to take a brief 30 to 45 second break. I am Lena Berman. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm doing a show alone about the science of weight resistance training, weightlifting. So I will break for a moment here, and I'll be right back with you.
Oh, Lydia, say, have you met Lydia? Lydia the tattooed lady. She has eyes that folks adore so, and a torso even more so. Lydia, oh Lydia, that encyclopedia. Lydia the queen of tattoos. On her back is the Battle of Waterloo. Beside it the wreck of the Hesperus II. And proudly above waves the red, white, and blue. You can learn a lot from Lydia.
Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, health integrationist, doing a show alone on weight training exercise, weight resistance exercise, weight lifting. If you miss parts of today's show and you want to get a copy of this or any other in the series Your Own Health and Fitness, you can call my information number 24 hours a day, and the number is 707-874-2772. It's 874-2772. We've been talking about the difference between aerobic exercise, where you're burning fat as a fuel in your steady state and you're walking, you're swimming, and anaerobic exercise, which builds strength and interval, and the fact that that's interval training, that you can mix them up, that you can do maximal efforts with walking and running and swimming and get a similar effect. You're building strength when you run out of air. And why it's, you know, we've talked about why it's so important to have extra muscle on your body, what it does. And I also just told you that doing things with light weights and doing high repetitions isn't really what this is designed for. Strength training is concentrated exercise. It's designed to put a absolutely maximal load on the muscle for a very short period of time, and then you give the muscle a lot of rest. Because the gains, the improvement in strength and the development of a larger muscle occur when you're sleeping. That's when your growth hormone is released and you you will release more growth hormone if you're doing this kind of exercise and you're getting enough sleep too. So this fear that women have, I trained people for years, and women used to say, you know, I want to look toned, I want to do this, I want to do that, but I don't want to have big muscles. This doesn't happen by accident. If your muscles are getting too big, you can cut back on the number of sets that you're doing. I have been lifting weights for close to 24 years, as hard as I possibly can, and I've never, not in recent history, had anyone say that I'm too muscular. So it's, especially as you age, it's very rare. I mean, there are people who are blessed, and then they get to just do less, you know, is the thing. Of course, they're going to hell when they die, because the rest of us are making all this effort. But it's not going to happen by accident. You're not going to wake up one morning and look like a guy if you're a woman. And if you're a guy, you're not going to suddenly start ripping your shirts. It just doesn't work that way. So the key with weight resistance exercise is staying anabolic. Anabolic as opposed to catabolic. Anabolic means that you're building. Catabolic means you're burning. And if there are, you know, we have this list of benefits to exercise. It builds strength, it builds muscle, you get strong, you get your immune system is strong, you become more energetic, you sleep better, your appetite is appropriate, you're burning more of your food as fuel for exercise, and it's getting stored that way instead of getting stored as fat, so you stay leaner. All these great things, fat burning, all these great benefits. All of those benefits go away if you over-exercise and don't rest enough. So remember that there always has to be a balance, and nobody else is going to have, you know, if someone says, well, what do you do? Well, what I do is not going to be relevant for you. In fact, what I eat isn't going to be relevant to you because you're you and you have different needs. Your life is different. What you're trying to do with your body may be different. And your genetics, your history is different, your personality is different, and your energy is different. We actually inherit a lot of our energy capacity from our mothers, and some of us got more than others, you know. So if you have to work with what you've got. If you don't, what happens is that you reverse all of the benefits of exercise, and it turns into a stress. It turns into a bad or distress. Distress as opposed to eustress, which eustress is where your body is inspired to develop and grow and develop and strength and to get better, you know, where it's sort of inspired. So eustress is inspiration, de-stress is breaking yourself down. Anaerobic is building muscle, and catabolic is where you're burning muscle. So one of the things that scientists learned from all of these bodybuilders who are taking synthetic testosterone, anabolic steroids, but these synthetic steroids, is that when you do that, it tricks the body into protein sparing. That means that normally when a person performs an exercise at a maximal level, it signals, you do one set, it signals that muscle to grow. That's the signal. More muscle fibers, please. Or maintain at that level. If you do it again, you're re-signaling the body. It's kind of going, yeah, you know, I got it. You told me to grow. I got it. You do it three or four more times, and in most individuals, the muscle will now begin to look for a source of fuel for this fast. It isn't, you know, you've already used the energy that it takes. There's a kind of energy cycle that happens in anaerobic metabolism where you make energy between sets, as you rest between sets. But there's a point where it can't keep doing that, and it's going to start burning muscle. It's not going to use all the muscle up. It isn't like if you do two sets, you build, and three sets, you burn it all up. But you begin to move in a catabolic direction, away from anabolic. This all gets changed when you take anabolic steroids. Now, this is not an advertisement for anabolic steroids. They raise estrogen levels in men. They end up with, literally, with mammary enlargement. They get breasts. They get, their scrotums get smaller. They get cancers of various types and a significant amount of heart disease, liver cancers. I mean, it is just a frightening. It's not a good drug. So it's not an advertisement for it, but it does bring up an interesting question, which is how do you protein spare and build? How do you do that? And the answer is that you do less. You do maximal efforts with less sets. This was the birth of something called high-intensity training, which I don't know why people do this because it's really uncomfortable. But it was the birth of this idea of how do you get to do the worst, most horrible, amazing, huge amount of effort with the least amount of time so that body has lots of time to recover. And this was doing the exercise very slowly. This was performing a lift in an agonizingly slow way. And I can say pretty much that it's actually quite good for getting you to throw up. It's really, if vomiting is your goal, it's a good way to do that. But some people do this, and it can be done. A time when I think high intensity exercise is probably beneficial is if you've been weightlifting and you have a cold or a flu and you want to, or you're injured in muscle, and you want to do that exercise a little bit lighter. You can perform a move and get maximal effort with a lighter weight by going very slowly. But, you know, this is not the only way you have to do this, because when you go back to the scientific literature, God love them, you know, these people who are putting people in a room and studying them, what we've learned is something that, you know, your grandmother could have figured out, which is that if you perform exercise slowly, you train your muscles to work slowly. That's right, yeah. And if you train fast and you make your movements fast, you train your muscles to work fast. And in fact, we have muscles that want to do different types of things, and whatever you train to do, your muscles will start going more. There's recruitable muscles. You have muscles that want to go fast and muscles that want to go slow. Aerobic people have lots of slow twitch muscles, so they can keep going for long periods of time. Weightlifters have lots of fast twitch muscles, which perform. But then you've got muscles that can be recruited. They can go either way, depending on how you train. So rationally, if what you're trying to do is just be a really healthy individual that can carry two grocery bags out to the car and up the stairs without any trouble, what you want to do is train at a moderate pace, and maybe do a little fast, a little slow. Although if you're moving fast, you may be using momentum, you may be hurting a joint, especially when you're holding a weight in your hand. So you may want to use your fast movements for something else. High-intensity training. Well, what we're talking about here is instead of the old style of weightlifting, which developed from all those years of strongmen and people who started to figure out that they could lift weights, which was to do four sets, to take an exercise like a bicep curl, which everybody pretty much knows. It's that exercise everybody thinks of when they, you know, it's your bicep thing. A set is one time you do a bunch of exercise. You do a bunch of repetitions, which means how many times do you lift the weight up? You know, you pick up the weight and you lift it up and you put it down. That's a repetition. And then doing maybe 8 or 12 of those is a set of an exercise. The exercise is bicep curls. Protein sparing is, the way you protein spare, it's not hard to figure this out, is you do one set, maybe two sets. But you do them at a maximal level. You don't do a kind of, quote, warm-up set. What you do instead is you warm up your body before you train. You get on a stationary bike or you walk around the block, and you don't do something that wears you out and makes you pant. You just literally warm your muscles up. You're literally warming up your body. Then you go in, you stretch, and you start lifting, and you stretch while you're lifting. So you don't have to do a warm-up set. You go right to a set which challenges the muscle to just give up, or very close to give up, depending on whether or not the exercise is going to dump a weight on your face or not. You go very close to the point where you can't do any more, or if somebody is behind you and ready to catch the weight, right to the point where, you know, very close to failure, very close to the end. And that's a maximal set. And you do it maybe once, maybe twice, depending on your stamina and your strength and your age and your fitness level, etc. Some people can do three and still get maximal. But I saw this work because I was training exhaustively myself while I was working very hard and commuting, and I started to lose size. And then I read this research. This was 20 years ago. And I changed the way I was training, and I started training people the same way, which is to do one or two sets. And people got enormous gains. They got money. So this is really good news, because this means you don't have to take drugs. And it means, well, unless, you know, obviously if you're going to crawl up on a professional stage or something, it's very hard for people who are not medicated, people who are not taking drugs, to compete with people who are taking drugs. It really doesn't happen. But aside from that kind of peak performance athletics, if you just want to get your maximal effort and enough rest and protein spare and get the most amount of building, the good news is that weight training, it doesn't have to be long. Because to do your whole body, for instance, do a few exercises for each body part, and do a whole body exercise, maybe a beginning workout where you're doing your whole body through two or three times a week, it might take you as little as 40 to 45 minutes, and that might even include doing some stomach crunches and some stretching. So it's not a very big commitment to do that once or twice a week. Actually, not once. You never do it once. There's something called a training effect, which requires you to do it two to three times a week. Otherwise, the body doesn't know what you're doing, and you slip into this weekend warrior syndrome where you're apt to get injured because the body's not changing. It's not adapting. It needs to have the stimulus more than one time a week. In fact, the deal with that is with weight resistance training, two times a week is really minimal. That's enough to get by without getting hurt. Three times a week or every other day is better, or to four times a week. And for running and doing cardiovascular and aerobic training, cardiovascular training, keeping your lungs and stuff in shape and your heart pounding, that really needs 3 days a week, or you just don't make any effort. You don't make any progress, rather, not effort, but you don't make any progress. And the interesting thing is that if four is better, if you get sick or you get injured and you stop, you'll lose your cardiovascular training capacity, your lungs and heart, that type of exercise, the running, swimming, biking thing, will drop very fast, a day or two, and you're out of shape and you're panting. Whereas with strength training, it takes a good 2 weeks before you really start losing strength. Which is interesting. So we've been talking about the fact that in order to stay anabolic and to be building and not burning, you do less sets and you do maximal effort. I talk to people all the time about this. Nobody believes me. They try it. They're amazed. People like to work out. I don't want to take that away from people. But if you're trying to get bigger muscles with less time, and you're trying to protein spare and you're getting tired, that's the way to go. Now, I've already explained to you that the principle of training is starting where you are and increasing as your strength increases. So this is not kidding. This concept of training is absolutely essential, because people get hurt and people get tired and people get all sorts of things when they don't do this, and they don't make any progress. One of the amusing things is when people tell me that they're doing all this exercise, they're listing everything, they're doing all this stuff, and they're not seeing any changes in their bodies. That's your clue that something is wrong. Either it's too intense or not intense enough, or you're not doing it often enough, or you're doing it too often. You're not getting enough rest, or you're not working hard enough. Something is wrong. Or it could also be that the exercises you're performing are not working for your structure, that your biomechanics, how you move, how your posture works, where your weaknesses are, what the position is of your shoulders and your hips and your joints and your strength of the core of your body, the exercises are not the right exercises for you. So the principle of training is that you start where you are and you increase as your strength increases, and then you will plateau. And you can either plateau and say, well, you know what, I look kind of the way I wanted to look, so this is fine, I'm going to maintain now. But if you plateau and you really get stale, it means you need to kind of change things. And that doesn't mean that you have to change things so much that you have to go looking for exercises that are kind of made up by people who are trying to keep people interested in weightlifting, or you have to go use some machines in a gym. Maybe that's a good idea. But really changing what you do can mean just changing the order of the exercises. And let me say something about order of exercise. When you do weight resistance training, you want to work your largest muscles to your smallest muscles. So you will start with your back muscles, because those are, I'm sorry, you'll start with your leg, if you're doing a whole body, you start with your leg muscles first. Those are enormous muscles. You do your legs, and then you'll do your back, and then you do your chest, and then you do your shoulders, and then you do the front and back of your arms. So that's big muscles to small muscles. They can also be broken up into doing opposing muscle groups. One day maybe you do your legs alone. Maybe with your legs you do your shoulders, because they're not going to interfere with each other. If you do your shoulders on a day when you're trying to do your chest, you're going to be so tired trying to do both of them. So maybe you do legs and shoulders. Or maybe you just do legs and you do your shoulders some other time. Or you do your back and then you do your chest, because they're opposing muscle groups. And I'm going to say a word about that in a moment too. So when you plateau, if you were doing a leg exercise and you start out by doing a leg press on a machine with a big heavy, and you know, there are free weight leg presses that I think are really very effective if you can control the position of your hips. You don't roll, don't tuck your pelvis under you, don't come down too low. You come to 90 degrees, not 45. But that's one that has plates loaded. So you do, maybe you do your leg press, and then you usually do maybe a hack squat, or you do a squat. So to change things around, maybe you do your squat first and then you do your leg press. It doesn't mean you do your back before your legs. Or I'm sure you're utterly confused now, those of you who don't know anything about weightlifting. But maybe some portion of this will stick in your head. A reminder, you're listening to a solo show. I'm Lena Berman. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm attempting to unravel the mysteries of weight resistance science, of weight training. Probably confusing you a bit, but what I mentioned before is that a concept in interval training or aerobic training, and this includes weightlifting, is that it's a maximal effort and then either a rest period. Now, it could be an active rest period. If you're running and you sprint, you don't stop and just stand there. You walk around, because you don't want the blood in your legs start pooling. You want to keep moving, as it's an active form of rest, but you decrease the effort. In weightlifting, actually, it's not bad to kind of walk around and stretch between sets too, but it's very important for this metabolism to work to build muscle and strength for there to be rest periods between sets of at maximal effort, because this metabolism is based on the creation of an energy source called ATP in the mitochondria, the energy cells in your muscles. And it needs to be restored between sets. There's a popular thing. As weightlifting got popular in the 80s, gyms were putting in circuit training circuits. This was an effort, and I think it wasn't an entirely bad idea, to get people to do something that wouldn't require much time. So they had people doing a circuit of exercises without resting between sets. And the idea here was that it became strength training and cardiovascular training at the same time, that you were getting you're getting your heart and lungs to work, you were getting out of breath, so you're training that, and you were also building strength. Again, like high-intensity training, if it's done properly, if you really do circuit training the way it works, this is a very good way to make yourself throw up. And it's maybe, I think, unnecessarily difficult, and I think it breaks people down. That's if they're doing it right. If they're not doing it very hard, you may get some minimal amounts of benefit from it, and then you get in and out of the gym faster, and maybe you don't have to work out as often. My own preference is that people not do that, because I don't think it really gives you the best of either of those two worlds. But people will do what they wish to do. we were talking about breaking the body down into different workouts and doing the whole, like making sure the whole body gets trained, at least with weight resistance training, with weights lifting, at least 2 days on every body part. Now, weight resistance training, really, it's kind of, if you're really going to make a big effort, it's probably better not to do a lot of it every single day, even if you're doing different body parts. You never want to work the same body part 2 days in a row because it won't have enough rest to really grow. Remember, the growth happens when you're resting and sleeping. Best thing is to, you can do different body parts and work every other day, or you can do 2 days on and 1 day off, or even 3 days on and 1 day off if you're using different body parts. But my recommendation, what I see work best, is to have 1 day where you're doing primarily weights and another day where you do something easier and more cardiovascular, like walking or hiking, and whether you do intervals with that, that's your choice. The reason is that doing two all-out sort of weight training sessions 2 days in a row, is the body kind of likes routine, but it also likes rests. It grows during rest, and doing something different is restful, even if you're still active. So some examples might be that you, what I said before, if you're starting out and you're a new weight resistance training person, you might do a full body exercise where you do your legs and your back and your chest, your shoulders and your arms, and it's not, you're only doing maybe one exercise for most of your body parts, probably two or three for your legs because they're really big muscles. And that could all be done in maybe 40 minutes, 45 minutes, and that may happen 2 or 3 days a week. When you get more mature at lifting and you want to refine what you're doing with your muscles and improve your range of motion, because you are literally training the muscles to be strong as you're performing a certain activity. And if you change the exercises, so you're using different angles and things, then you might want to be doing more than one set per exercise. You may want to do two sets on your bicep. Bi means two. Tricep, even though it means three, maybe two is enough there. So maybe you have four sets on your arms, maybe three or four sets on your shoulders, that sort of thing. Three sets on your chest, maybe three sets or four sets on your back, doing different parts of your back. So you might break down into a variety of different ways. Some people do their lower body, their legs, in 1 day, and then they'll do their entire upper body in 1 day. My preference is to see legs and shoulders together because, as I said, the shoulders are hard to do when you're doing your upper body. Another thing that people can do is to, and this is what I've noticed works really well as you get past 50 and your energy and recovery is a little bit different, is to do something like legs 1 day, and that may take you 40 minutes. And the next day, you do a walk or a run or a swim, and then later in the day, you spend maybe 10 minutes doing your shoulders. It's just a little short thing. And then the next day, maybe you do your back and your chest, and maybe you wait and do your arms either that night or you do it the next day when you're doing something like a walk or something. That's what I've seen work well. A good rule of thumb is that you never spend more than an hour lifting weights. Not talking about the stretching and doing little stomach exercises. But you don't want to use up all your glycogen and run on empty. You just can't recover from that fast enough. Another thing is that the stretching is absolutely imperative. People tend to overtrain certain areas and get into funny body positions. And for that reason, I would say it's best to actually start out by having somebody teach you how to do this and analyze your structure, your weaknesses, your biomechanics, and then and prescribe exercises based on what you want to do with your body and what your body will allow. Do your shoulders roll back properly? And that you not learn from a book or a tape, honestly. I don't think that's the way to start unless the book and the tape breaks down a way for you to analyze your structure in the mirror. Very important concept I'm going to have to go over pretty quickly here is training from the inside out. This means strengthening the core of the body, your abs, your pelvis, the muscles in between your wings on your back, between your scapulas, the shoulders being back and down. This is stuff that you learn when you do Pilates, and Pilates is a way of doing that. Pilates is a bench and a form of exercise where it pulls away from you and you pull in. This is something that dancers learned by doing floor work. You can also learn this doing weight resistance training, but it's very important to secure the trunk of your body. The way to think of this is if somebody suddenly came at you as if they were going to punch you, you would clench down the middle of your body. In a way, that's kind of what I mean, but it's a little less caved in probably than that position. You're not caving in and tucking your pelvis and grabbing your groin. You're doing more of a thing of sort of tightening down your stomach without tucking your pelvis and drawing your shoulders back down and drawing in a little bit before you make a movement. A way to learn this would be to lay down on the floor with your knees bent and just notice that if you attempt to lift one leg if you just lift one leg, you'll probably wobble. But if you lay in that position and you very gently drop your belly button to your spine without tucking your pelvis so that you're tightening your stomach, and then you lift a leg, you'll have secureness. You won't wobble around. You'll be tighter. And that's how dancers do it. It's very important to balance your muscle groups. It's terribly, terribly important. You train the whole body equally. I don't care if you're a runner. You don't use the same kind of muscle fibers, the same kind of... It's different to do weight training with your legs. It will improve your running. It doesn't mean you don't have to work your legs. Or, men often think that women only look at their upper bodies and they don't train their legs. It's very important to train the whole body equally because the body, the opposing muscle groups control and protect each other. The most classic example is your lower back and your stomach. People with lower back problems because their stomachs are weak. But it's true all over the body. Another concept is that range of motion, in order to save your joints when you're lifting weights, you don't need to go through a full range of motion. You want to stay within a 90-degree angle. And the reason is because you are holding a maximal weight in your hand. If you want to do full range of motion stuff, go swim, go do some yoga, stretch, other things, not with maximal amount of weight in your hand. You don't need to go through a full range of motion. You want to make sure you are isolating the muscle that you need to work and not recruiting other parts of the body in order to grow that muscle so much, although you do some. And then free weights versus machines. My experience is that machines initially were designed to rehab people from injuries, and they do it very well. Now people are getting fancy with machines. People are trying to come up with ways to keep people interested in exercise. Not all machines are designed correctly. Not a surprise here. Shouldn't be. Be cynical. And they're not all adjustable enough. So be careful with machines. Some of them work really well, but free weights build more balance in, and they can also be better for recovery when you're trying to deal with proprioception and balance and core strength and all that kind of stuff. But build slowly from the inside out if you're going to use them. And a combination of the two usually is ideal. Don't stop working an injured area completely. You lose the most strength and the most muscle when you injure yourself. Do not hurt and re-inflame an injured area. Work around it, but don't completely avoid it if you can. So weight resistance is also rehab. And I'm out of time, so I'm going to get off the air. Thank you very much for listening to today's show. I'm Lena Berman. If you need more information or you want to get a cassette copy of this or any other in the series, Your Own Health and Fitness, you can call my information number at 707-874-2772, 874-2772. For a list of other available shows, go to the website, yourownhealthandfitness.com, with the requisite W's, yourownhealthandfitness.com. All the information will be there. Next week, an interview with physician Dr. Jay Mead from ZRT Labs about human growth hormone supplementation, the favorite of all the Hollywood stars. Find out if it's right for you. The engineer for Your Own Health and Fitness at the Powerhouse Brewery in Sebastopol is George Curtis. Thank you to Johnny Otis and the Powerhouse. And at KPFA, it's Sally Phillips. I'm Lena Berman. Your Own Health and Fitness is produced live by Free Speech Radio. May it live forever. KPFA 94.1 FM, Berkeley, California. I'll be back with you next week.